Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe, where the mission is to normalize the conversation on sexuality while providing you with a real education on sex, intimacy, and relationships. You know, the one you never got in school, from your parents, friends, or the internet. I'm your host, Susan Morgan Taylor. Let's get down to it. Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome back to another fabulous episode of the Sex Talk Cafe. I am excited to introduce my guest today, Dr. Juliana Hauser, who has over two decades of experience supporting people to discover their own sexual agency. We're going to talk about that today. Can't wait to get into that. Dr. Juliana Hauser leads conversations about taboo topics like sex and sexuality, menopause, intimacy, relationships, and more with approachability and expertise. And she has a PhD in counseling education with a thriving virtual practice. She's also a beloved media personality on screen, on stage, and in print, and is a TEDx speaker. Dr. J is also the creator of the holistic sexuality courses, including Revealed, and is the author of her new book coming out in September this year, 2025, A New Position on Sex, A Guide to Greater Sexual Confidence, Pleasure, and Authenticity. Dr. Juliana Hauser, welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. I'm really happy to be here.
Yes, I'm so excited to have you. And I think what's so unique about our conversation here today is you and I are both sex therapists, and I think a similar educational path, though I didn't go all the way to the PhD, so that counselor education is like the next step where a lot of the master's degree students, I've got the master's and you went all the way to the PhD. So can you just tell us a little bit about your expertise, your experience, your education, how we find you here today?
Yes, you know, it's funny. I started off as a kindergarten teacher. And so I was an elementary education major. And it's so interesting to, when I run into my college friends, people I met there, they're like, wow, how did you get from there to where we are now? But what I found along the way was that I was really interested in how people interact. And I felt had a really high comfort level in taboo places, which is you know, part of what you said in my introduction. And when I was getting my master's, I realized that when I was working with couples, that sex was coming up, but I really didn't feel prepared for those conversations professionally. Personally, I did, but not professionally. When I went for my PhD program and wanted to specialize in couples and family work, I was looking for programs and noticed that there was hardly any, like I thought at the PhD level, maybe I'd have it, and there wasn't there either. I had one class, it was an elective, and it was sex and couples, and I was riveted. I loved every single second of it, but I realized that my classmates didn't have the same level of interest, and my professor took me aside and said, like, every once in a while, someone like you comes along who's interested in this, and you really should, be, you know, focus on that. So I did my dissertation on, at the time it was called Restructuring Female Sexuality, and I wanted to dive in, and I found that, and I was working at then it was called a women's studies program, now it's gender studies, that there was a reticence for the community to embrace a class directly on sexuality, but the students were really interested and almost, I'd say, desperate for it. Yeah. So they told me if I could get six students, then I could teach the class at William & Mary, and I had it full within 3 hours. And then I taught it for many years afterwards, and just the ripple effects of it and the way that I could see it was making a difference, not just in who they were as sexual beings, but in all areas of their life. I knew there was something more important. And in my own life, I saw that when I put attention towards who I was as a sexual being, it changed all of my mental health and wellness.
Yes, and you have in your work this holistic framework, a holistic approach, and that's a very big part of what your work is. But before we get into that, one thing I want to say is, it is so interesting to me, and I'm sure you get this all the time as well, couples who come to you for your help, who have worked with other therapists, and I hear this a lot. We did couples therapy, but we just couldn't go there around the sex. Like, we didn't feel either we didn't feel comfortable disclosing that to our therapist, or, and this is even worse, our therapist refused to go there.
Yes.
Yeah. Shocking.
Yeah. It's mind-boggling to me. And when we look at, I think Florida is the only state right now that requires a class. There may be one more that's in the works. Mm-hmm. But to me, that's just kind of unbelievable that, you know, so much of who we are, and then especially in our relationships, evolves around who we are as sexual beings, yeah, and our sexual lives. And how are we not being trained as therapists,
right,
to have that? So I'm on a mission to change that.
That's
but
wonderful.
It's not easy. And, you know, we're just like in the medical community, because the medical community isn't trained as right. well. We are humans in these professions. So it's not just that we aren't being trained professionally, but we also, like most of us in the United States, we're not given any education, or at least adequate and positive sex education. So I'm not surprised as therapists that many aren't comfortable in the topic, and we're trained not to go, yeah, not to go to places that is out of our scope of practice and education.
Right.
But the problem is, it shouldn't be out of our scope of practice. It
I totally
should be
agree.
Something that we're all
beings.
Very comfortable in and dealing with on a personal level, not just, yeah, you know, professionally too. Because our stuff comes in and interacts. And if we haven't dealt with our stuff sexually, it's going to interact with us professionally.
It's going to show up in the room one way or the other as the therapist. And so, yeah,
yes.
And I think it's indicative, you know, if couples who are listening to this have been with a therapist who either they didn't feel comfortable disclosing with, or the therapist flat out said, I'm not going to go there. I mean, that's really often indicative of the therapist's resistance to kind of going into that realm within their own personal exploration and professional exploration. It has to be both. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, agreed. And again, I'd rather someone say I'm not educated or as opposed to going there and causing issues. But when it takes so much bravery for most people to say, we need to talk about our sex life, to have that in a space where, yeah, you're supposed to be trusted and held, and have someone say, you know, we're not going to do that, I don't feel comfortable. It's just, that is not the message that our profession needs to be handing out.
Yeah.
So I hope that we can change that. And I'm so grateful to meet other professionals like you who have done the work in order to feel comfortable personally and professionally, so that we can be there for people. The ripple effects when someone feels at peace and held and safe within their sexual lives is enormous for, yeah, relationships, communities, and cultures.
Yeah, and let's stick on this thread for a minute, since we're talking about education, and kind of go and wind it back a little bit, because I think so many of us, I don't even know what's happening out there today, like in our educational system, like as adolescents and teenagers, like what kind of education is happening. I know when I was a kid, middle school science class, I think we had a whole week on it. And it was mostly about, here's what the organs do. And, you know, they put the fear in you about STDs and pregnancy. It's all fear-based. No one's talking about pleasure. And I know when my kids were in, I think it was fifth grade, they got one day. And it was the fifth grade teacher who was super embarrassed. And so what is wrong with it? Like, tell me your perspective on that. Like, what's actually happening in our system today around sex education? When is it beginning? When do you think it should begin? And what are they doing maybe that's actually harming us rather than helping us?
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's really changing a lot in the past year or two. And I think we're going to be seeing lots of, okay, of changes in the next year or two as well.
Okay.
But currently it is abysmal. And we are, if you are being educated in the public system, then it of course varies state to state, but it is still so highly regulated. And when I speak to school systems or people who are making decisions, the biggest thing is they are so afraid to do any risk taking in how they are educating the students that they're going to offend families, that they are erring on hardly doing any education. It is reduced to one day. Hmm. And it's not one day every year. It's one day period,
right,
in their lives. And it is so basic. It's basic anatomy. And that is it. And it is now I say that there are some public school and private schools that are trying to make a difference. And there are some states that the education actually is quite inclusive and progressive, and doing a lot of good. But I'll come back to the parts that aren't so good. But I'm thinking of some clients that I've had in California who were raised, and when I met them, they were high school and then going into college. And even with the education that I would consider some of the best that I've come across, it was still didn't prepare them for the actual skills that you need to have to navigate your sexual life through the lifespan. But it was better, a lot better than everything else. But a lot of it is fear-based. A lot of it is heteronormative. A lot of it is positioned within a relationship. A lot of it is like scare tactics.
Right.
And it's very rarely that it does anything that's practical, that is pleasure-filled, that is holistic in nature.
Yeah.
And so I live in Kentucky, and, you know, by reputation, we don't have the best of reputations about where we are educationally and in the sexuality world. But last year I was hired by a Montessori school to come in and do an hour and a half of teaching for their middle school.
Okay.
And it was, you know, as excited as I was nervous too. Of what, how are the, you know, how do I meet the needs of what I want to be teaching these kids? How do I meet the kids' needs? And how do I meet the various viewpoints of the parents and the families? And so I did a lot of pre-work and told them what the curriculum was going to be like and gave families lots of time to absorb it. And I did what I thought would be great for the kids. Like what I, you know, again, like here I get to do what I want to do. And bless their sweet little hearts, what I wanted to teach them is not what they wanted to learn.
I was going to ask, like, what did you find they actually wanted to learn at that age? So we're talking
middle
school.
Wanted nuts and bolts. They wanted nuts and bolts. Yes. Okay. Like, what will happen if I wear two condoms? I had one, and I had a line out the door of the kids that were waiting to ask me questions because I was given permission to be able to get more one-on-one with the kids if they had questions they were embarrassed to ask. And one of my favorite ones, and I learned such a lesson, I'm going back in a month, and so I've revamped my presentation, but he whispered to me, he's like, how do lesbians have sex? And I was given permission to answer, so I gave a, you know, pretty high level answer, and I used the word scissoring as one example. He goes, what is that? And without thinking, I put my fingers together like and showed him with my fingers how it worked. And he's like, oh my God, don't do that. And I'm like, oh, right. People will see what he's asking. Oh. And it was so precious to see the innocence of why they were asking these questions, to see their eagerness to have somebody safe that has been sanctioned to give them answers. And to realize really what they're wondering and why.
Right.
And just how hard it is to create a sexual culture that supports all the messaging that we are given through our lifespan of what sex is supposed to be, yet we don't give them the education and the atmosphere in which to achieve what we're telling people is what someone has decided is the right kind of sexuality, which I know you and I don't think there's a right kind.
Right.
We know that's the messaging of it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting. I still want to have faith that we're going to be able to right the ship and to create a sexual culture that's creating a positive approach.
Yeah.
But we're not there currently.
We're not there yet, but we are a lot better than we were. I mean, if you go back 50 or 60 years, we've come a really long way. My question in terms of education of kids, I mean, my theory is I think we should start as soon as they start asking. And, you know, my kids started pretty early on and I didn't, you know, I just gave them the lowdown. And I'm kind of curious because I feel like we think we should wait until, you know, middle school or high school. But by then, sort of the awkwardness has kicked in and a lot of more of that shame, like, oh, it's like taboo and I don't know. But when they're little, like, you know, kindergarten and 4, 5, 6, you know, like they're curious and they're exploring their bodies already. Many little kids are. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of curious what your take is on that. Like, when should we start educating our kids?
So when I talk to parents about this, I say at the beginning, it's about you, not about them. It is about you getting comfortable
so
talking
true.
About it. So, I have two kids and I had them pretty far apart. So my son, who is 26, got a very different mom than my daughter, who is 11. And so I started very early with her because even though this, I don't know if this is the same for you, but so even though I do this every day and I've talked, you know, to thousands of people about it, when it came to my own family, my own life, it's different.
Yeah.
And I found myself, you know, can I do what I tell people to do? So when she was very young and truly before she was even really able to talk or even know what I was talking about, I started using the words.
Yeah.
I started saying that the anatomical body parts. And I remember the first time that I used the word clitoris, she was two. And I was like, what am I saying? This feels so wrong. She had no idea what I was talking about. But I realized that I needed to get comfortable in saying things. Not that I needed to like be comfortable saying clitoris to a two-year-old, you know, about it. But it was like, if I show a hesitation, if I show a bias to her, even in the most subtle ways, I'm giving her a messaging. And that doesn't mean that I have to be comfortable with absolutely everything, because I do think owning some discomfort, if you're owning that and naming it, is really helpful as well, because it brings everyone's discomfort into the conversation. But I agree with you. Once you get yourself to the place that you can use the words that feel age appropriate, and you have, you know, gone over that hurdle, then it's really about where are your kids, and what are they asking? What are they interested in? And it varies, not just family to family, but kid to kid too.
Yeah, absolutely. So why do you think it's important for us as human beings to even like explore the realms of our sexuality? Like, what is this aspect that you take of holistic sexuality? How does it affect other parts of our life? Like, why bother? Why is this even an important part of our lives to look into?
Yeah, I love that question. And I think it can be a pretty big hurdle for some to think that what I'm saying is sex acts are this huge important part of our lives, and so we need to prioritize it. And that's not what I'm saying when I say holistic sexuality is a really important part. The phrase I like to start with is that I really believe that our sexuality is the final frontier of self-development. I think that people leave it to the last part to explore, because of the messaging, the lack of education, and the fact that our culture really tells us there is a right and a wrong way. We rarely ever think that we have it the right way. So we just sanction it off and put it as a to-do list because we think we're just talking about sex acts. But what I'm saying when I say that it is a part of our self-development and part of our overall wellness is that sexuality is one of the few things that we have in common. And there is a biologic and a mental health component to it. And if you are avoiding something that has a biologic and mental health component to your wellness, then you are missing a really big piece of it. And so much, there's so much interaction between our biology and our psychology with sexuality, that in ignoring it or keeping it at a really base level, you are really stunting your ability to grow more authentically into the truth of who you are. Yeah. So I believe that our sexuality is the essence of us. It's a pathway to the truth of our authentic self, and I think it's an expression of it.
Beautiful. Okay, I'm going to throw this question at you, because I'm going to start asking this to all of my guests. I've just decided, like, just now.
Oh, great. I love it.
So, in your own words, from your perspective, what is sex? What do we even mean when we say sex? What is that?
It's, to me, it is biologic, it is psychologic, it is social, it is cultural, and it is the intersection of all those places. And then I would add, it is the core expression and pathway to our most authentic selves. That's what I think it is.
I love that. Yes. And I think that that can also, because I think when we hear the word sex, we tend to think of the sex act. Right? Like sticking something in a hole usually is what comes to mind, or at least genital contact comes to mind.
Yep.
And so how would you say we talk about sex in a way where it is more holistic, where we can sort of get out of that immediate association, just it's all about just genital contact?
Yeah. And whose genitals you're doing it with.
Right.
When I ask people that question, most people will start with sex acts or sexual orientation.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, that's part of it. Surely it's part of it, but it's not everything. So backing up in my research, when I was back at Women Marry, and I was teaching that class, and when things started really kind of clicking for me, I started hearing when people were sifting through their sexual lives, it was impossible to have it just being the bubble of the sex act. It invariably added other aspects of it. And so I started asking people more questions. And I'm sure you know Dr. Dennis Daly's The Circles of Sexuality. And I was teaching that. But even then, so 20 years ago, I looked at that. I was like, this is so outdated. And everyone is using this. How has this not been updated? So that's what I set out to do. And so for 20 years, I've been updating it. And that's what I'm releasing next month or in September. I wanted to update it, and I asked people, thousands of people, about who what was a part of who they were as a sexual being. And I ended up with 9 pillars of holistic sexuality. Okay. And some of them overlap with Dennis's. Well, I don't know if it was just Dennis. I think it was probably a whole lot more people. He just got the credit for it.
Okay, yeah, usually it's the case, right?
Yes, right, yes. But so some of it overlaps, but there was additions to it as well.
Okay.
And then with those 9, in the hub of it, was agency, and he had in the hub of his values, and I took that out, and put agency.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. And so I want to talk about another like outdated model, but while we're on the thread of your 9 pillars and the topic of agency, which I wanted to get into because I know that's a big part of your work and I'm interested in that and what, and what that means. So maybe since that's sort of the hub of the 9 pillars, can we talk about what agency is?
Yes. Yeah. So the shortest definition of agency in the way that I look at it is that you need to live your term, like learn what your terms are. Yes. So what are your yeses and nos? What are your yucks and yums? And how do you live them? So if there's 2 parts to it. And then I look at agency as a skill, and like, so a noun, a verb, a concept, and a skill. And I love teaching people the skill of agency. Yes. And I've created 5 steps for it. And basically, it's decision making, and how do you make a decision with purpose and intention, in the truth of who you are. But it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah.
And with agency, it's really showing up for yourself. It is knowing that your voice matters. It is the work of really being truthful about who you are individually, and then being able to express that outwards to people.
That's great.
And then knowing that every time you activate your agency, you are learning more and more about yourself. You are learning self-trust. You're learning to tune into who you are. And when people make decisions based on the truth of who they are in an agency, they make better decisions that serve them. And when people are doing that, they become more authentically who they are, which serves everyone in their lives. And even if decisions are hard decisions or they don't turn out how you'd expect, in my research, what I have found is if someone can go back, even if a decision has just gone to hell, if they know they did it with purpose and intention, then the healing process is a very different experience than if it happened to them, if they let other people make the decision, if someone took their agency from them in a violent or in a coercive way. And as a therapist, I saw, with client after client after client, when we would go through their lifespan or when they would come to me with a specific thing, the lack of agency was almost always an aspect of their biggest pain points.
Yeah.
Even if you could look at it and think, well, that was actually a worse experience, just on paper, but their experience with it wasn't as bad because they showed up for themselves.
Right.
The worst harm is self-abandonment, in my opinion.
Yeah, I love this. And I love your model. And I'm excited. Everyone listening, make sure how can people, while we're on the topic of the book, with the 9 pillars are in the book, I'm imagining, right?
Yes.
And the book is coming out next month, but how can people pre-order this, or where do they find the book?
So it is on all online platforms, and I don't have a pre-order. I'm doing everything online.
Okay.
So September 23rd is the day to buy it, and I have several links so that people can choose the different platforms they want.
On your website, there's several links.
On our website,
So this is a new
Amazon and Barnes & Noble are the biggest.
Okay, awesome. A new position on sex. Amazon, Barnes & Noble are the biggest outlets. But if you go onto your website, and what is your website real quick so people can...
It's dr-juliana.com with one N.
Okay, awesome. And of course, I'll drop that in the show notes. But I just want to do a little plug for the book here while we're on the topic of it. And I like this. You know, it's interesting because I have a model I developed called the Pleasure Keys. And I use different language for how I work with that. There's 9 wisdom codes in that.
Oh, great.
But I like this, you know, that how you've simplified it and how you, in your work, how you're using the word agency, which is so easy, I think, for us once we understand what that is and what that means. And obviously, I know it's more complex and obviously than what we can get into here in this interview. So everyone go buy the book. But yeah, I like that because there's a simple way, I think, for people to kind of, it's not complicated, right? We can remember agency. Mm-hmm. And then there's sort of an association, you know, if they read the book or do some work with you or take one of your online courses, they learn that skill. And then that becomes something that I'm imagining ideally becomes sort of embodied and embedded in their way of being and in their relational way of being, like how we actually show up for ourselves and also how we show up in relationship. And I'm imagining having that as sort of the foundation is really useful. And it can be, game changing.
Game changing. And I actually say life saving too, that when you have agency as your North Star, it really allows you to have a framework to show up for yourself that can in many ways save your mental health. But in a lot of ways create a big difference of richness in your relationships.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask you this question because, you know, agency, when we learn what that is, how to live it, how to embody it, why it makes such a difference. I also hear the word empowerment. However, it seems to me like there can also be some ways that like being so empowered and so, you know, in this agency and exercising that can actually become a limitation in certain situations. And I'm curious if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yes. I'm really glad you asked about that. It's something that feels really important to explain to people that there's a pathway to agency. And boundaries is one of the first things that you start with, like boundaries with other people, saying like, this is not okay, this is okay. Then the next one is boundaries that you have with yourself. So I'm not going to let, like, you can't talk to me like that. And then the next boundary is I'm not going to stay in a relationship with somebody who talks to me like that. And usually you stay in that place for quite some time of like hearing your voice. It feels really good. We've all had the experience that when somebody is when somebody respects your boundaries, when it matters to somebody how they interact with you based on what you are sharing with them, it feels awesome. And then we get to a place that we feel empowered. There's tons of empowered movements, and I am an advocate for being empowered, which to me I define as knowing your voice needs to be a part of the conversation. Some people slip over to entitlement, and there's not a person on the planet that hasn't been entitled in some way, but obviously entitlement is not the way that we want to stay and causes a lot of damage. But so does empowerment, because empowerment is individual and it's really individually led and it's really about you. And that works if what you are empowered about doesn't conflict with somebody else's empowered view and stance, but invariably we will come up against that. So for me, empowerment is individual, but agency is relational. And that is, to me, that's the problem of what was happening in our society right now is we have a lot of entitled and empowered people, but we don't have a lot of people that are being in agency, which is I have to show up with what is right and what is a yes and no for me. But I also have to be somebody who leaves space for other people's yeses and no's.
Oh my gosh, I love
and
that.
Then I have to have the skill to negotiate when that isn't convenient and isn't working, which is a lot of what we do in our couples work. I know you stay in this space quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do a lot of teaching with agency, and I would say in all of the many years I've been doing work in agency, and I do it within the context of sexual agency, but also outside of a sexual context, that the people that get it the quickest and the most are the ones that life forced them into the experience of doing a lot of self-reflection. So the trans community, the non-binary community, they're like, oh yeah, I get it. Yep, my trans journey is an active agency, or my coming out process is truly an active agency. Or someone who's experienced assault or had their agency taken from them, that they get that. What I find is that white heterosexual men have the least amount of agency in our culture in North America, and that is confused with having a lot of power and privilege. And so when I work with men who fall into this category, it's usually a pretty hard lift. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of grieving in realizing that they haven't really been given a life where they got to choose a lot. They were given a lot of power and privilege, but they didn't have a lot of choice within it, which is very, very different.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That's like groundbreaking what you just said right there. I really think so, you know, and beautiful, yeah. Such beautiful work. I love that you've like sort of revamped this old model after kind of discovering just from your lived experience as a therapist and as a human being that it was just sort of not really encompassing the full picture. I love that. And something that I've been noticing as a sex therapist, you know, we're taught, and I think Western sexology in general, it's really reliant on that Masters and Johnson four stages of orgasm, right? Where orgasm is really like, again, like just this event that happens in time and space, and it happens like this very linear way. I don't ascribe to that because in my own lived experience and what I've observed, like there are many other pathways to orgasmic experience and orgasm. It's not just sort of that linear tension and release model that we've sort of been brainwashed into believing is the way that we reach climax. And I'm curious if I'm seeing your head is nodding.
Yes. So, oh, I love talking to people who know this.
I love it. So now that I have like, you know, another sex therapist here with me, like, let's talk about this. Like, what's your take on that?
Well, of course, you know, I'm so excited to hear you say that. And it feels the same to me as when it finally kind of got out in more general culture, that even just the wording that we talk about conception, that like the sperm, you know, got to make it into the egg and like the strongest sperm, whether we just realize how pervasive the patriarchal way of looking at the world has, we just don't even realize it, even in our science.
Yeah.
And it hasn't reached the way that we talk about the excitation cycle, which is, you know, what you're speaking about. And I remember looking at it and thinking, the caveat to this research is that it's really hard in particular to measure a woman's excitation cycle. And yet we're just going to skip over that. We're going to skip over that.
That's too complicated. So let's just exclude it from the research and the data.
That's right. Inconvenient.
Right.
That we can't figure this out. So we're just going to make the assumption that it's just like what we're seeing in the male model and not figure out how to do that. And we just, you know, I know that's the case in so many parts of medical research. And I know there are people and there are organizations that are really trying to make a difference. And the Kinsey Institute is really trying to change and modernize our science research. So I'm so grateful for that. But I agree with you. When I look at that, and it's painful for me when I have to say this is the starting point of what you're going to see out there. So if you're looking at it, you can Google all the graphs, and they're all going to have the same plateau and the same look to it. And I don't want you to think about that. I don't. And because I think some of the work that I have to do is helping people not start with a comparison model. And really tune into what is the truth, get to know your body and what is your excitation cycle. And not even use it as a comparison model to begin with, because we're already then starting on we're acting as if that's the right way.
Right,
that's the anatomical right way. That is the preferred way. Everything else is broken or less than or abnormal. So that's often where I begin. And then the next step is sitting with people in the I don't know, which I find that there's a lot of grieving in the I don't know space.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll say my most important work is just being a cheerleader of hope for people that, you know, I don't know is a great answer.
It is a great answer.
And as long as you have curiosity with the I don't know, then like, let's get in and figure it out. It's one of the reasons, too, I am a huge proponent of sex surrogates, and I love the sex surrogate work. And I think that the way that those who are trained in sex surrogacy, it's based in agency, and it is based in Let's Learn About You. It's a very individual approach. Mm-hmm. So the excitation cycle wouldn't even be something that they're looking at, because they know in so many ways it's irrelevant. We just need to find out what it is like for you. But I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
What do you say about
it? It's very similar. So very much like the not knowing is a lovely spot to be, because now new information can come in. And like, I love the space where you start of like, let's not compare to anything, because you're right. I think people often come in and they've been sort of miseducated or like brainwashed, like this is the way it's supposed to happen, and it hasn't happened that way for me, and so how do I make it happen in that way for me, instead of like what you're saying is, let's first of all, there's other ways, there's other many pathways, and we need to have enough spaciousness to allow that pathway to be revealed, you know. Because that's really how I look at it. Orgasm, or becoming orgasmic, is a pathway. And then there's different ways our bodies might respond to that, or different pathways within the body. One of them is sort of that excitement and the, you know, tension. I call it the tension and release. Like, we're tightening, we're getting excited, and then there's the explosion. And it's the very linear type of orgasm or climax, mm-hmm. which I just call that climax. But then there's all these other pathways in our body, which I find rely more on relaxation. Awareness, where's our awareness? Are we going up into mental fantasy, which is one pathway, the indirect pathway of pleasure? Or can we learn how to focus on just sensation in the body, like actually getting out of the mental indirect route and really starting to cultivate that direct route? And I've noticed as that begins to be cultivated, there becomes access to more and more ways of experiencing pleasure and more areas of the body that can access pleasure. But we have to get out of sort of that it only happens in one way. So mm-hmm. I think Amen. I named one yes. of the models like expansion, like relaxation and the expansion model of orgasm, where it's really like a dropping in, a letting go, a surrender, and then it just sort of goes out from there, rather than kind of like tight, 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 friction, friction, friction. Ah, it was great. And now we all drop off the cliff, right? Which is one way, but right? There's these other ways.
Right. Right. And that's, again, part of what happens when we are not properly educated, is that we don't know what we don't know. And depending on who you're exposed to in your sexual timeline, if you were never exposed to that in a sexual partner, or and partner can be verbal only, it doesn't have to be that you're actually sexually connecting with them. I call those like the sexual Sherpas. Luckily, we have a lot more access to information, like through your podcast, through the internet, than we did years ago. But it's, if you don't understand that there are so many ways to go about it, then it's a really limiting experience. Yeah. And I think too, like we're also not taught how to become embodied, how to tune into what our bodies' yeses and nos are. And that can feel like a lot. It's one of the reasons why sensuality is the first pillar that I bring people through when we're looking at holistic sexuality, because it is, there's so much information that you can learn there, and everyone has access to at least some senses.
Yeah.
And what I've learned is, like, a lot of people will not describe themselves as a sensual being. They have this one viewpoint, just like with orgasm or with climaxes. Yeah. There's like one way that it's supposed to be. And when I was like, no, inherently you are a sensual being. You're mixing up sensual and sexual, and you have a view of what sensual is based on media and movies. But you are already sensual just by breathing in this way. That when someone's like, oh, okay, well, I can be sensual, then I can also be my own way of being sexual.
Yeah.
And some of the most powerful moments in my work, and you used the word revealed earlier, like it'll be revealed, which is why I called my course Revealed, which is what the book is based on. So I love that you said that organically. It's so eye-opening when it clicks in that someone goes, oh, right, I get to do this on how my body is experiences and naturally built for, and it's my birthright to that pleasure. And then I say it's also your responsibility to learn that. Like it should be not this luxury to be learning about who you are as a sexual being. It really should feel like a necessity, and we just haven't given ourselves the space in order to learn that, and learning who you are through your senses and your pleasure points through your senses is so powerful.
Yes.
And it opens up a brand new world of what you can experience.
Yes. I mean, that was my, my personal story, my sexual awakening over gosh, 15 years ago now, it was very much that was the path, you know. And I wasn't yet a sex therapist. I was still in graduate school, but I just wanted something different so badly for myself in my sexual relationships. I, you know, single at the time, but really decided, like, I'm going to figure this out, like, while it's just me, and stop making somebody else responsible, and just get really curious about, like, how does my body respond? What do I feel? What do I notice? And that was the pathway into massive full body orgasmic experience, like, not too far into that exploration. So, you know, it really is amazing what is available to us when we sort of just get curious about our own body, how we are wired. And then, you know, having the principles, like what you're speaking about, the pillars in your work and in, you know, my work, the wisdom codes, having those prints, which they're just principles, right, that we're working with and learning how to embody those and live those. That is so much more empowering than, like, oh, you need to go, like, just buy a stronger vibrator, or, you know, like, try this new sex position, or, you know what I mean? Like, that stuff's fine and it's fun, but it doesn't really address, like, the root of what most people and most couples are struggling with when they're having challenges in sex.
Agreed. And the way that I like to give a metaphor in this is that when you start with sex tips, it's like when you're trying to build a building and you start with the attic.
Yep.
And so I was like, well, you could do it that way. I mean, we need the attic, we need the roof, but what you really want is to have built the foundation first.
Yes.
And sometimes, I mean, by the time someone gets to me, they're like, you know, guide us and we'll do it. You know, what, you know, we're going to trust your framework.
Tell us what to do.
Right. But I always have to warn, like, hey, this is going to feel like we are slowing down a whole lot that is may not make sense why we're starting here, totally. And how we're going to get from here to what your stated goals are of feeling more sexually connected and more fulfilled sexually. But I promise you, if you put the work into the foundation, if you do this, there's so much waiting for you that will make a difference than going straight to the sex tips. Then we know. It's like the way that I kind of look at the nine pillars is that it's almost like a sexual audit.
Yeah.
That we are looking at, like, who are you as a whole, from a 360 point of view, who are you as a sexual being? And where are the parts where you're already resourced and knowledgeable, and where are you not?
Right.
And then we can put the right sex tips and the right information on top of it.
I love that. And I'm with you on that. I do see that a lot when couples are starting out. They're like, how does this lead us to where we're trying to get to? And that can be challenging sometimes. Like, like, just take it and learn what there is to learn. Discover what's here with these pieces. And it's really neat when people do trust that and they put in the work, and then suddenly the lights come on and they're like, oh my gosh.
It really is. And it's, I mean, I know you're saying about your sexual awakening. I had my own version of that when it really clicked for me, it was like, oh, okay. Like, I feel better about who I am when I'm not performing sexually for somebody or for myself. I feel better when I actually know the answer to what is a yuck and a yum for me. I feel better having this more holistic way of approaching myself if I'm going to connect with somebody else. I'm like, oh, right. Yeah, I want to tell everybody about this and see the differences. And it's also really powerful. Another a workshop that I've done that I love, it's called Sex and Money. And it's so interesting. Like, I would do it, like, with accountants and investment, financial investors, that when you see the comparisons between how we look at money in our world and how we look at sex, and the tabooness and the rights and wrongs, even if it's like, I love starting where people are. So maybe it's talking about money is an easier topic for you. And then easily we bridge over to who we are as sexual beings. It doesn't really matter in what angle that we start the conversation. It's just, are you willing to walk into the I don't knows?
Right.
And I've never worked with any, I don't work with, except for, like, teaching at the middle school, I don't work privately with anyone under 18. But when I work with 18 year olds, when we start doing this work, they will say, I wish I'd had this so long ago.
Yeah.
And so it's never too early, but I also work with people in their 80s.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and it's never too late. Yeah. It is never too late to do this. And when I tell people, like, I hope if I'm lucky enough to live into my 80s, and I'm hoping I'm vibrant sexually. And I hope that I still get to have that experience of knowing who I am and being in wonderment of that. Because I think the other part of our sex education that is so lacking is that we don't look at the timeline
right.
of who we are as a sexual being. And we don't teach people the predicted changes as well as the possible changes that could be happening
oh.
that are either challenging or wonderful.
Right.
And I just, I'm in menopause right now, and I had a hysterectomy a year ago. And even though I'm in this space, and I do a lot in the menopause space also, I knew things logically,
right.
but I wasn't educated outside of that.
Yeah.
And it really should be a part of our sex education.
I'm so with you on that. All of a sudden, everything's like, what the actual F? Like, what? We knew this was coming, but like, no one actually prepares us for that as women. It's so whacked out. And we need
it
more.
Is.
I know that space is opening more and more, and there's educators out there now, which is so amazing. But yeah, we need to have a lot more positive education, I think, around menopause than what we currently have. Like, mm-hmm. I know the jokes and the memes, and those are all actually kind of funny because it does kind of feel yeah. like that. Someone's like, what the actual F? Where did this come from? Nobody prepared. But also, like, there's such empowerment that comes at midlife for women and to move through the menopause journey and to do that in a way where we're embracing the changes rather than pathologizing them, I think is so important. So I love that you are
well
working
said.
In that space as well. I mean, so needed. So, Dr. J, it's been a fabulous gift to have you here and your wisdom, your expertise.
Oh,
yes. Thank you for being my guest. I want to give our listeners a way where they can connect with you. So anything that you would like to share, how can people find you? We know about the book, but if you want to do another reiteration on that, go ahead.
Great. So thank you. And thank you for having me on. So I'm Dr. Juliana Hauser on all social media platforms. And I have a newsletter that you can sign up for on my website that I know you'll have the link to. And then my book is called A New Position on Sex, A Guide to Greater Sexual Confidence, Pleasure, and Authenticity. And I'm really thrilled. It's based on 20 years of research. And I go through the 9 pillars. And I teach the 9 pillars, and then I give personal stories. I give client stories that I've been given permission to share. And then I give exercises and I give journal prompts just to begin it. So it's really a primer into holistic sexuality. Mm-hmm. And I'm really hoping that it will replace the 1981 version of the Circles of Sexuality 2 and provide that sexual audit and the beginnings for a lot of people to really elevate and evolve who they are as sexual beings.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I'll drop all that in the show notes as well, so the links will be there. And thank you so much
thank
again
you.
For being my guest on the Sex Talk Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me for the Sex Talk Cafe. Please be sure to leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. And if you're ready to discover the 3 secrets to deepening connection, enhancing pleasure, and expanding your orgasmic potential, then be sure to grab your copy of the Pleasure Keys ebook at pleasurekeys.com. To learn more about my private coaching, couples retreats, and other offerings, be sure to connect with me at pathwaytopleasure.com or find me on social media at Susan Morgan Taylor. Thank you again so much for joining me today for the Sex Talk Cafe. Thank you.